So let's start then. So who is on the call?
Margaret, Katrina, it's Margarita, Danielle, Leslie, you, and from staff, Gabby and me, Bart, and we do have apologies from Eduardo. So I need to start the recording. Yes, it has started.
Thank you very much. And thank you very much, Bart, for sending out materials and agenda for today. I'm back from vacation and still a little bit messy with all my work. So we have started reading all the guidelines. Well, we were supposed to read three guidelines and refresh our memory regarding ICANN bylaws. Well, for me, it was a very interesting read, even though I've read them before, but I still discovered some interesting things, things that I'd never noticed before. For example, it says that the CCNSO has liaisons from GAC, ALAC, and regional organizations. And it says that we can have additional observers, for example, in our case, that's, those are people from GNSO, but we still call them liaisons, even though technically, well, legally maybe, they are observers. I did not get what's the difference between liaisons and observer according to bylaws is, but still, this is something that differs from practice, so we use the term liaisons for all of them. Another interesting thing I noticed there, we if CCNSO council members participate remotely, we need some reasonable means of verifying the identity of CCNSO council members. So far, I think we do only voice recognition, don't we? So that's something also that seemed interesting. And completely, I could not get anything from Section 5 of our, that's regional organizations. This is still a mystery to me. Because it says that the CCNSO Council may designate a regional organization for each ICANN geographic region. Oh, I don't know, I never thought about the regional organization as something that we designate, CCNSO designate. But, well, whatever. This was really interesting to me. Then we thought, The three guidelines we were supposed to read, it was so one was a guideline for setting up CCNSO working groups. Then we had a guideline on the CCNSO procedures for CCNSO statements with a tentative timeline, and then the last one. The one I reviewed was a guideline to maintain and update CCNSO work plan. So, this is a short summary of things we were supposed to do. And can we start with according to agenda, review of guideline to set up working groups? Leslie had very nice summary here. Well, maybe you could, since we now hear you, Leslie, could you give us...
Sure. Yeah, so the guideline isn't too bad, but I just think it could be improved. But it's a long time since I've read this one, actually, and it was interesting, though on the face of it, it talks about being a guideline for setting up working groups. It also talks about draft charters and the role of the chair and how you add new members and closure of working groups as well. So it is already bigger than the title suggests. And that took me to thinking about, should we actually have something, a guideline on working groups generally, of which this could be just one part. So I know we don't want to get too bureaucratic, but from time to time we do have problems around working group participation, for example, and it's never really been very clear as to how one might get rid of somebody who's not participating or deal with any issue you might encounter as chair. So we could go further than just setting up working groups. I'm suggesting we probably should have guidelines that cover everything to do with working groups as well as setting up.
Thank you very much. For me, it was also a very interesting guideline. Well, first, it wasn't quite clear how the call is issued, because they were supposed to have, well, according to the guideline, we accept members from the CCTLD community. And it does not say how to issue the call, how to ensure that the CCTLD community members, well, even non-CCTLD members can be reached out.
And it talks about representatives of CCTLD managers as well.
Yes.
And yeah.
That's what it does. Which apparently is, well, I think it's wrong, because they are on the group to work for the benefit of the community, not for their CCTLD. Another one, it's just a question. That guideline says that we have that the council appoints members. The question, I'm just asking, do we really need this step? It's okay initially, but every time when somebody wants to join the group, do we really have to wait until the next council call to discuss this? And
yes, I mean, in my experience, it's helpful to have the ability, although hopefully you don't need it very often, to not appoint people occasionally. But I agree with you, there might be a better, more efficient process about appointing people, particularly after the first group of people has been appointed, how you add additional members to a working group. It seems quite onerous to require council approval, and I kind of thought about, is that actually necessary? Maybe the chair could do that, and the council just appoints the initial membership. But there is potential, and Bart will have a longer memory than I do, you know, there is potential for some controversial people to join, or do we just say anyone who wants to participate can join, and that might then leave you with a very unwieldy group.
That is true, yes.
True, yeah.
Maybe we also should have the group, already existing members of the group can vote on
Katrina, can I add something? Because I actually remember that we in the Secretariat many years ago suggested to change this, because it was a hassle for us to, you know, ask every time the council to change. And I'm not sure, maybe the council has matured since then, but then I remember there was quite a vivid discussion about this, and the council made it very clear that they want to keep it. And in fact, they actually even made it stronger, this rule, that I think the council now has 2 weeks to object, and that was not in place before that. So I just remember that we have raised it before, and at that point at least the council said they want to have the possibility to object, because I guess that in case some strange person or whatever would like to join, they would like to have the possibility not to appoint this person.
Yes, but perhaps it should be up to the group itself to decide if they view the person.
I absolutely agree, and this is what our argument was at that.
Well, let's try to raise this issue again, perhaps. Yes, Bart, do you want to say
that? Yeah, it's the way it normally works, it's at the suggestion, and that was the final check. Say, originally, when it was unclear, it was always at the suggestion of the working group. The working groups is the first instance of approval of whatever you want to call it. But then, say, at some discussions, and I think we had one or two issues at the time, it went up to council. And it's, in that sense, I think if you think it through, if the initial membership is approved by the council, and you do not do the additional membership, so why do the initial membership at all by council? So it's probably more a consequence of the initial approval as well, and the initial approval, the upside of it is that the process is far more transparent than what you see. There is a bit of, and it puts a bit of seriousness around it as well, and that's more the psychological side of it. If you compare it with, for example, how some of the other SOs and ACs seek volunteers and get volunteers, it's not, yeah, they work, so especially GNSO, work on the basis of a statement of interest, so you have a bit of an idea who's on the call, but for the rest it's very unclear who and when will be on a working group. It's very fluid, and the good side of this one is it increases the transparency a little bit. That's one of the other things.
Well, first of all, if the group is open to all CCTLDs, I can't see how the council could legitimately deny participation to somebody from a CCTLD.
Katrina, sorry for jumping in. What they do is, at the end of the day, is either directly or indirectly, they say there is a conversation, say they do not deny the CCTLD, it's more around the individual person and to how that person is related to the CCTLD, or if there is something known about that person that may not be, say, it is setting off some of the other members or some of the councillors. So it's not around the individual, it's not around the CCTLD as such, but it's more about the people on the working group, because at the end of the day, it's around the people who do the work.
That is absolutely correct, but at the same time, if we do not have list of characteristics or something that we expect from members in working groups, and I don't see how it improves transparency if we don't have some certain criteria that must be met. How can we say that? This particular person does not seem.
In the sense, what it does is, say, let me, if you take it through, say, for each working group, say, it is a signal for us as a secretariat to include people, for example, on working group lists, email lists, and to inform. And so if you leave it open, it becomes...
I'm not saying it must be open. It can be, for example, if somebody wants to participate, sends a request either to the secretariat or to the chair of the working group. Chair then informs members of working group. And if members accept this particular person, then chair has an obligation to inform the CCNSO, the chair of the CCNSO or the CCNSO council about this, and this can be noted by the council. We skip this unnecessary period of waiting until the next.
We do currently say the administrative or the logistics, it's also a matter of email. Sometimes we do it by email. So it's an email decision. I think that the real core of the question is whether you want council to make the ultimate decision.
Absolutely, that's what I was just going to say, Bart. I think we need to, when we report to the council about our work, I think that's a question we need to ask the council to consider as to whether that requirement is still there or not. And then we can just get the guidelines to reflect whatever the council decision is. But I was just going to come in to say, in my own experience, the issue isn't about needing to keep people out of working groups anymore. It's, you know, we have sometimes struggled to get people to join working groups. But most particularly, we have struggled to get people to participate when they are in the working group. And I know from time to time I get really frustrated that I think some participants just join a working group in order that they can put it on their CV or somewhere, some application, and then they never actually participate. Do we want to address that as well? I would question.
I think absolutely. There was something about the chair of the working group having the right to kick out somebody from the group.
Can I just also remind you that we actually had a working group looking into this a few years ago, like 3 years ago, and I produced a final report and I can try to dig it up for you, because there were some recommendations which the council actually approved, and some of the recommendations were exactly, as you said, that to give the chair more power to intervene and to encourage working group members to be more active.
Thanks, Gabby. That's helpful. I mean, yes. This guideline does not currently say that you can cease membership of a working group if the chair says you're just not pulling your weight.
Okay, so Gabi, please send again this report you just mentioned, and perhaps we should summarize, put it into summary. And I think Leslie's suggestion regarding this particular guideline, we should extend it, I completely agree. What about the others? Do you agree? Margarita, Daniel.
Daniel can only type in the chat. Yeah, he agrees. Margarita?
Yes, I agree.
Okay, so thank you. I think that's a very good suggestion. There were some other things. It wasn't quite clear what the benchmarking of the goals of the working group supposed to mean. Do we have some tests or whatever? Well, that's something that wasn't clear to me. And another one, in respect to the current practice, the guideline says that the working group develops its own charter. Frankly, I've never seen this happening. I'm not saying that's not the case, and with updates it's definitely the case that the working group proposes updates, but initial charter was really developed by the working group.
It could, but then you're more into the GNSO. At the time when it was written, it was the working groups at the time were, or the volunteers who wanted the working group were drafting the charter. Excuse me. What might be helpful as well, and this is maybe out of scope here, but say the CWG on cross-community working group, a framework for cross-community working group, say from the staff side, we are working on a first set of guidelines. I can forward you that set as well, because I think the creation of cross-community working groups may have an impact here as well, or as a sub-charter, or as a subset of creating working groups in general. I don't know if that's helpful.
Yeah, I think it would be. So please send it. Another one, which was also a discovery to me, it said that the working group charters are regularly reviewed by, and it says by CCNSO. Any comments on that, Bart? Maybe you remember how this thing found its way into the guideline, and are they really regularly reviewed by the CCNSO?
Not really. It was the intention at the time when it was written, and it was deliberately CCNSO, meaning the membership and the council, as in a joint effort. But effectively, if you look at the current practices, most of the time, and that is used from time to time, it's the working group itself reviews the charter when it runs into issues. And say with the longer standing committees, sometimes it's initiated by council, and again, sometimes by the working group itself. I would say never by the membership.
Yes, so this is also something that differs from practice. Okay, that's all I have to say regarding this particular guideline. So thank you very much, Leslie, for reviewing and for great suggestions. So let's assume it's more or less finalized, and we'll have set off proposals for this guideline.
Katrina, may I add
yep.
one more,
yep.
And that has more to do with cross-community working groups. This is where we ran into the issue. So as you may recall, the appointment of the CWG members already caused some issues. The appointment of the members of the CWG stewardship and accountability caused even more issues. And so, especially when there is a limited number of members, whether in these kind of working groups or in cross-community working groups, we've devised a mechanism where you definitely need the council. And maybe this is a place to include it, as Leslie suggested, in, say, a section on appointment, to include that rule as well, if there is a limited number of members, either in a cross-community working group or in this type of working, or ordinary working groups. Because that's, say, we've done it on more or less documented in a council decision-making process, but it is not documented in a guideline.
Yes, I think it's a good proposal.
Okay, I'll change it now into the other one.
Yes. Yes, let's move to... The other one is a guideline to maintain and update CCNSO work plan. Well, generally it was, I think it was pretty clear with some things, and this is something I wanted to ask Leslie as a native speaker. For me, it's quite strange to read a guideline, a document like that, when it's written in the future tense. Is it, well, for example, if I read, the guideline will be reviewed periodically. Well, to me it sounds like, well, one day maybe we will start reviewing the guideline. And this future tense, well, for me it's really very confusing because, well, any time when we ask, for example, why this guideline is not reviewed yet, we say, oh, it will be reviewed one day. So, Leslie, is it normal thing to use? Because, well, I would prefer present tense or at least something more stricter. And this future is slightly murky to me. So, how is it?
Yeah. Well, but the English language is never clear, of course, even to native speakers. Yes, it's quite normal for it to be in future tense if a review hasn't yet taken place, and in fact quite a few of the guidelines will inevitably be in future tense because they're talking about things that are being set up and so the review, for example, hasn't yet happened. I think we can probably get around that if we know what we're going to put in the guidelines and then, you know, have maybe some resource to do what I call plain English writing. So if we know what we want as content, there's then a task to put that into plain English. And generally on those type of clauses, yes, they would be future tense, unless it's already happening, in which case you would say, for example, every September this guideline is reviewed.
Katrina, this is Margarita.
Yes, Margarita.
Well, from my legal perspective, when you say something like that, normally is something that you can do if you need it. It's mandatory, but it's facultative. It's something you can do if it's necessary. So the rule is you have to do it, but you can decide it when and if it's necessary.
Well, that's helpful. I think that's where you need to decide as to whether you use the word may, so you're obliged to do it, or can be, or
right.
Will be, yeah, or should. So if you say will, if you say will be, this will be reviewed every September, then there is no choice. If you say this may be reviewed or this can be reviewed, then that would be quite different.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. But that's the reason why the sentence is open.
Well, yes, in Latvian, laws are never written in future tense. I think maybe that causes this confusion to me. And plus, if you say they will be reviewed regularly, I would really expect some more concrete definition of regularity, because regularly could be once in 10 years, once every 10 years or something. It's also regularly, but I would like to have it more concrete. Okay, that's just me. If you say will is fine, it's fine. And even more, I completely agree with your proposal, Leslie, to translate it into plain English after it's written. It would be really helpful. So, regarding the guideline, well, there are also, my problem is that I am a lawyer with a computer science background, and this combination is really horrible. When I start reading documents, then I just, if I see several terms used to describe the same thing, for example, this is in SO council or council or the council, or I really would like to expect one term to be used, or in this case the title says thesis of work plan in one word, and then in the text it's work thesis of work plan two words, and sometimes just simply work plan, and then sometimes list of activities, and then the overall work plan. And it all sounds too confusing to me. But again, it might be just me, and normal people read it and understand what's... I do understand what is meant here, but it still causes some frustrations to me. But again, as I'm saying, it could be only my internal problem of computer science, software developer and lawyer living in one body. But still, I put it into my review template. And it was not clear how the consultation and input from the CCTLD community is carried out prior to presenting the work plan to the CCNSL Council. This was something that wasn't clear from the guideline. And then again, there are some things that are supposed to be reviewed regularly. And some things that seemed a logical problem to me. So that's a very short overview about this guideline. But in general, I think it was pretty good. I would like some rewriting, though, but just to make a clearer distinction who does what. This is something I really lacked in this guideline. Unfortunately, we do not have a review from Eduardo. He was supposed to review guideline of CCNSO procedures for CCNSO placement.
Katrina?
Yes?
Maybe I have one question regarding this guideline, and I know we've communicated a little bit around it.
Yes, we did, yes.
It's what you will see in this guideline, it includes the whole mechanism around the triage committee.
Yes.
It's an annex. And I think, given, and Katrina, you and Gabi especially know, and Margarita, about the workload of the triage committee, and Leslie, you know about the value. I wonder whether that should be taken out and maybe turned into a charter of a standing committee, a standing council committee, and then refer in this guideline to the triage committee. Because I think it's the triage committee has grown in importance, fulfills an important role, but it's very untransparent in a way how it works. But that's just a question, suggestion.
Yes, it's really hard for me to say if we need a separate charter. But I would definitely add it to the body of the guideline, not to have it in an annex.
I think it should be separate because I think they're different things. So I seem to remember when we created the work plan, it was about managing the workload, ensuring that people knew when particular bits of work were going to be finished, or why we were so busy. We could see in advance the work coming in our direction, etc. And it was about having some control over that. But the triage committee is about how you do the work, as opposed to a work plan, if that makes sense. So I think they are different things.
Margarita, do
I
you
agree
have any
with
comments?
Leslie. Yeah, okay. No, I agree with Leslie.
Okay, thanks. Okay, so then this is one of the recommendations.
Maybe Daniel, any views? Because he's only online.
Yes, but I'm not sure he understands what triage committee is doing. Well, triage committee is a standing committee from a council members who review incoming requests as recommended by the staff, and we review them and then issue recommendation to the council. So Daniel has no objections. Thank you, Daniel. Okay, so this is about this particular guideline. Then I don't know if we had, if others had time to read the guide, not this one, but the guideline regarding procedures for cease and desist statements. Again, I would structure it a little bit differently, having, you know, just trying to organize it. Because we try to cover different cease and desist, in the beginning we say that there are just like ordinary statements, and then we have some critical incident statements, and other, we just, you know, just try to define them in the beginning. But that's regarding the structure.
Katrina, yes. May I suggest that either Eduardo does it, or that we do it the next call and use the template again, and that we, and I think what is in order to move these two forwards, I think the two of you, say you and Leslie, have been working with the template, so it might be useful now to address the question whether the template is a workable way forward,
yes,
and then take the next step.
So we, you propose we do not try to discuss this statement.
No,
unless
it's,
we have review. Okay, we can do that. We can wait for a review. Well, for me it was more or less okay. When we start with issues identified with document itself, and then detailed evaluation, and then the last one, additional comments. It wasn't clear what to write where. Somehow I managed, but I'm not sure that additional comments are really additional comments and not a detailed evaluation of the comment. But, personally for me, it works out. It works okay. Leslie, how was it for you?
Sorry, just unmuting. Actually, I found the first kind of three or four boxes difficult because it wasn't very clear what an issue was, as it were. For me, I guess the value comes in on, does the document flesh the issue, yes or no, and does it clearly set out roles and responsibilities? For me, the first three boxes are kind of open to interpretation. But I think we need to do a bit more practice on using it before we say, you know, change it or whatever. We've used it twice now.
Yeah, it's.
I think let's give it another try and just keep working on another review, and then see if we need to change it. So Daniel wrote in the chat, maybe add to the template validity period for the guideline, forcing a review by its end.
I think that's the next one, the framework itself.
Yeah, I think it's the next one. Yes, I agree. Okay, so let's see. Let's discuss this at the next call once more. So next steps. Let's take the next guidelines. Now I have to look for the list. Bart, maybe you have them somewhere close. Daniel, during our previous calls, we agreed on the priorities. So priorities are how we're going to review, order to review the guidelines.
Katrina?
Yes, I found it. Yes.
Yeah, it was, and for all, it was included in the email I just sent to you about 1.5 hours before the call.
I saw there were... No. That was a structure of general framework for the structure of for guidelines and both reviews you sent, but
And in the body of the email.
Yes, I see. Sorry. So we have reviewed the first three. Two. We still don't have a review from Eduardo regarding the response and statement procedure. So this is still very topical for the next call. Then we have, this time there are many of us on the call, so CCNSO rules, CCNSO council meeting guideline, CCNSO meetings guideline. I would suggest that Leslie takes CCNSO council meeting guidelines, since you were the chair and you know it perfectly well.
Katrina?
Yes?
Before we go there, because I have, say, as staff person, I have a bit of a concern.
Yes.
Who's going to do what? So we have reviewed, say, it's very clear the statement one needs to be reviewed. But, say, we got the general framework. What do you want to do? So that's probably my question. What do you want to do with the results of the review of the, say, the ones you have reviewed and Leslie have reviewed? Do you first want to review them all, or do you want to first start working on a potential update of these guidelines, the ones that have been reviewed to date?
Yes, I'm sure that we need to, well, since we need to report to the council and the first report every council call, but we'll have to give an update to the community in Buenos Aires, too. First, I don't think that we have... I would love to propose new wording for guidelines, but I'm not sure that this is the task we are supposed to do. If I remember correctly, the charter... We are supposed to identify issues and report back to the council. Bart, could you correct me if I'm wrong?
I have to look it up, Katrina. But say my hunch is that once you've identified them and you have a discussion around them, it's easier to do it on the basis of a review of the of reviewed guidelines and improve text than anything else.
I agree, but is this what we are? If we are allowed to do that, it would be great. But I'm not sure that that's.
Maybe that's a question for the upcoming council meeting.
Maybe. Okay, let's take it offline. We discuss it and then propose to the groups, just not to waste time of others, because I'm really not sure. I would love to, but not sure that's what we're supposed to do. But let's check it, okay?
Yeah.
I mean, I think my comment on that was, I think if we are going to do that, we should do the rewriting as close as we can to the review and the discussion, because otherwise you will then forget.
Yeah.
you know, whilst it's all fresh in the mind, it's helpful if we are going to do redrafting to do it following that review and discussion as opposed to coming back to it later.
That's true. I agree with Leslie.
It's probably open to interpretation, but I would say propose the changes on a guideline-by-guideline basis to the Seasonal Zone Council at regular intervals in accordance with the adopted work plan. So that would suggest the change of the guidelines themselves.
Okay, then it's fine. Maybe then let's stop for a moment and not start reviewing next guidelines, but let's propose... let's do it like that. I propose changes for the guideline I reviewed, and Leslie proposes changes for this working group thing, and but others continue reviewing.
So, Katrina, if I can come in here, I think there is a question around resource. So I suggested that the one I reviewed could be much broader and cover working groups more generally. So it's become a much bigger task than just reviewing setting up working groups. So maybe this is a question for Bart and for the Secretariat. We're going to need some Secretariat resources or some external resources.
That's why I say... Say in a couple of, say, if I spend together with Gabi and probably with you, Leslie, bouncing it back and forth so you can review it, and then we can suggest it in 2 weeks, say, then it's doable to do one or two guidelines. Because I think at the core we use the same text, and then we start adding stuff and changing it. So that's doable for two. I think if we do more, then it becomes very difficult.
Well, I will do my guideline. I will propose it, and then you can just review and update, and we can discuss it.
Yeah.
Okay. And by the way, there's something like guidelines for working groups recently developed by Center. Maybe there's something that we could use as very good students. There's some ideas.
You can forward it.
Yeah, I will forward it. Just, you know, for overall idea. Okay, so do we agree that we... continue working on these guidelines, and then we have Margarita and Daniel who review another guidelines. Let's say CSNSO rules. It's quite a short document.
Okay, I can do it.
Oh, be careful with the CSNSO rules, please. It's not a guideline. If you look at that one, it needs to be changed. There is a quorum rule, etc. My suggestion will be do it at the end. If you look at the overview, the season's over.
Your proposal was.
Yeah, I know, but it's
okay. I agree. It's not a guideline. It's the fundamental one of the most fundamental documents of CSNSO. So I think it was from 2004, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And it's very obsolete, I think. But unfortunately, there's nothing we can do with it because changing the rules requires 66% of, or at least in the first round of voting. 66% of yes votes from the members.
But that doesn't mean to say we can't change it. It's been done before.
Have you ever changed the rules?
Leslie, I think we haven't. No, we haven't.
because it would
change the UKNFO bylaws. I remember being partly responsible for that.
Yeah, no, the bylaws is one, but these are the internal rules. You can do it.
I'm just saying, if something needs to be changed, we shouldn't say we're not going to do it because.
Yeah. No, absolutely.
No. We will do it, of course. But year by year, it's getting more and more difficult because we get more and more members, and unfortunately, not all the members are very active and participate in voting. But so, of course, absolutely, it doesn't mean we cannot change them, and should not at least try to.
They need to be changed anyway to reflect, say, if the bylaws will be changed at one point, the overall policy or IDN CCTLDs become eligible for the CCNSO.
Okay, so Margarita. Okay, I know.
Yes.
The last proposal was to leave it till the end.
Perfect.
No, wait. Don't get
so we need you can assign me what I need
yes.
to need, and it's perfect, no problem.
Yeah, CCNSO council meeting guideline, will you review it?
Okay, perfect.
Okay, very good. Daniel, it leaves you with CCNSO meeting guideline.
Katrina, could you help me in order to do it, mail me which text I need to read, please?
Yes. Okay, I will mail it to you. Daniel, we have calls every 2 weeks. So you should do the review. Okay, wait a minute. Now I have to check. So next call is on 25th May. It would be good if you could send your review to Bart or to the list by 21st May. Please use the template provided. Read it and say what do you think. Okay. So far, we have two things. First, we try to propose changes to the two guidelines already reviewed, and then Daniel and Margarita try to review the next two guidelines and send in the results, and we will keep discussing them. Next call. So next call is 25th May, 12 UTC. I think that's more or less all I have for today. And I'd like to thank Bart for taking care of agenda and sending out all the materials because, that was really, really very helpful. Thank you, Bart. And thanks a lot, Leslie, for your excellent review and proposals or suggestions. So, anything else? Any other business? Any other suggestions? If no, I'd like to thank you for participating in the call and and see you in 2 weeks.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you very much. Goodbye.
Thank you, Katrina.